Hello, 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 penguins from every corner of the universe, every iceberg floating out there in the ocean or wherever penguins happen to be nowadays. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Soren O'Connell. Our friend Forrest Hunt, who usually hosts this show, has a bad case of laryngitis right now, so he can't be bringing his beautiful voice to the hosting booth over here like he usually does. But today, I'm joined by associate head coach Scott Waterman of the men's Dominican basketball team. Scott, how are you doing today?
Soren, great to be here. And first of all, we need to talk about Forrest not being able to play through some injury here. I don't know. It's kind of question his toughness right now.
Well, he's also needed by Mr. Stu Horn for the setup over at for Soul Candy.
Got it. Well, I think we should have gone with that versus the laryngitis, because I think he could have toughed through that laryngitis. He's a tough guy.
we'll go off and say it's a little bit of both.
There we go.
So, well, today we're talking about the NCAA tournament. Now, as soon as any good sports fan hears the word March, you know there's going to be madness involved. We already had a little March Madness down at the Conlon Center. A few weeks ago, we had the PacWest tournament. That was a lot of fun to call here on Penguin Radio. We had you, Scott. We had you in the booth there too. You did a great job with the color commentary. Always happy to have you. But now we're talking about D1, not just D2, folks. This is the dance, Scott. What's your overall view on this year's tournament, or what are a few things that jump out at you when you look at the bracket?
I think it's going to be a highly competitive tournament. You've got some teams across the board that have put on excellent performances throughout the year, and I think you're going to get some great matchups. I know everybody likes to talk about the sleeper teams and the upsets. I'm sure there'll be some of those as well, but you know, it's just it's a flip of the coin, and that's the one great thing about the March Madness tournament, NCAA tournament, is that it's not a best of seven like the NBA. It's not all the build-up like the Super Bowl. It's one game to decide who moves on. There's not anything else like it in basketball. 68 teams, so it's not the best 12 or not the best 16. They give 68 teams the opportunity, and you get to go out there and see what you can do in a one-game situation where anything can go. And a lot of the games will come down to last-second shots, last-minute defense, and the tougher, mentally strong teams will come out on top.
Speaking of the very first games that are being played, right now we got North Dakota State and NC Central playing for a chance to take on Duke. North Dakota State up 49-45 with 13 minutes to go in the second half. I love the first four games, but I wouldn't say either one of those teams has a chance against RJ Barrett and Zion and the gang.
No, I would definitely agree with you, even though we did learn last year with UMBC, 16s can beat ones. But I think Duke may be a little too much to overwhelm them, that's for sure.
Well, okay, so we're talking about Duke, so we may as well stick on the subject because there's so much you can say about that team. They're the heaviest favorite to win the tournament since Kentucky in 2014. Do you have anything to say to the crowd that might dissuade people from just automatically picking Duke to win the tournament?
Yeah, I think, they're obviously, when they're at full health, which Zion Williamson was out for 5 or 6 games this year, and they went 3-3 in those games. They definitely have some deficiencies when he's not in the game. But as a basketball analyst perspective, two things that could beat Duke would be, A, they're not a great outside shooting team. So you could see teams packing it in, trying to make them make three-point shots. And they have a guy like Jack White who went for a stretch where he was 0-for-28 over the course of 4 or 5 games. RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson aren't great three-point shooters. So that's one thing that could potentially throw them off. And secondly, their depth. Coach Krzyzewski's never been known as a guy to play 8, 9, 10 guys like some of these other teams in the tournament will. So if a team can get them in foul trouble, make it a little bit more of an up-tempo game, which, yes, may fall into Duke's hands, but wear them down if it's the second game in 3 days. There's definitely potential for them to get upset at some point in the tournament, but probably not on Thursday.
Friday. I'll agree with you on all points. So now that we're talking about one seeds, let's move on to another one seed, Virginia, the team that lost to UMBC last season. As I'm looking through the KenPom rankings right now, KenPom has Virginia at number one above all other teams. What's your general outlook on them?
Well, you know, you go back to last year's game when UMBC upset them. And the thing that doesn't get factored in is DeAndre Hunter, who's their best player and probably a lottery pick in this year's draft, didn't play in that game. They found out 3 or 4 days before that he wasn't going to play. And if you take a player like that out of your lineup, you know, without a lot of time to prepare, things change. And you have to be ready for that. So that was, you know, a big factor in that game last year. And I give UMBC all the credit in the world, and Tony Bennett does as well, the Virginia coach. But this year's team, with the addition of Kihei Clark at the point guard spot, Hunter's back playing really well. They have Jack Salt on the inside, a big guy that's a bruiser, sets a lot of great screens to get their shooters open. Kyle Guy being that shooter. They're definitely a team that can be reckoned with. Thing about them, though, they like to play at a slower pace, and a team that can get them up and down could cause them problems. On the flip side, they always have a great time with North Carolina, because North Carolina can go up and down, and Virginia, on the contrary, controls the tempo. So they're a tough matchup for a lot of teams.
They absolutely are. As you were mentioning, the UMBC upset last year, one of the things that shocked me most about that game, UMBC won by 20.
Yeah. Yeah, the wheels.
What on earth?
wheels fall off. You know, it takes a little bit, and then all of a sudden, a few shots don't fall. And, you know, for a lot of very good teams, you know, we like to say that when you're scoring, you play defense, and when you're not scoring, you don't play defense. Well, with Virginia, they're a team that, regardless, they're always playing defense. And I think it was one of the very rare times in Tony Bennett's career where his teams weren't scoring and stopped defending.
So let's move on to another one seed. We'll just cover all the one seeds, and then we'll go through maybe a few of the more interesting, maybe upset likely games. So let's move
on
to
your show, Soren. I'm just here to talk.
Okay. So let's move on to Gonzaga here. I've been so impressed by Hachimura. I've watched a few Gonzaga games this season just to see him play. Likely a top 10 NBA draft pick as well. What's your outlook on Gonzaga?
First on Rui Hachimura, incredibly versatile player, inside, outside, strong, physical, does a lot of the dirty work. But I think a key guy for them is Brandon Clark. He came in, and in 1 year, he's a transfer from San Jose State, and in this 1 year, set the school record for blocks. He's a super athlete, averages double-figure points, and it's kind of a key guy for them in that power forward position when they put Rui at the five. The key, though, for Gonzaga will be their point guard play. Perkins at the one spot has been very inconsistent. For about a good stretch after the Maui Invitational through most of West Coast Conference play, he's been good. Against St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference Championship game, beginning of last week, he wasn't so good. He's the key, Josh Perkins. And if he can handle the ball, not turn it over, make open shots because he's going to get left open when doubles go down into the post on the inside, then they're going to be a definite factor. But again, Coach Few does a great job getting his guys prepared. And a key factor for them as well is Killian Tilly, who was hurt last year, came out, started the year healthy, then got hurt again. He started for them last year, and now he's their sixth, seventh man. And he's been playing about 15, 20 minutes ever since he got back. If he can get on a roll, get some good momentum going, he will also be a key factor for them going beyond just that first or second weekend, or that first weekend, and getting into the second weekend in Final Four.
As I look at these KenPom rankings again, we got Virginia at number one, Gonzaga at number two, Duke at number three, but then you have to go all the way down to number six to find the last one seed, that being North Carolina. It's always a fun season when you got Duke and North Carolina as one seeds, but it looks like Duke might have the edge on North Carolina. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, North Carolina. Well, let's backtrack a couple of things. First of all, in terms of North Carolina getting a one seed, when the committee looked at it, there were probably six or seven teams that were all in contention for that one seed. You had Michigan State, Dr. Leeds, it's for you, Tennessee, and Kentucky were also right there for the one seeds, and it could have gone to any of them. They all had good arguments for, and
Michigan as well.
Yeah, you know, in my opinion, but. Because they got swept by Michigan State three times, they would give them for sure a locked two seed, but really makes it hard to put them at number one, even though they did start 19-0. But you couldn't have gone wrong with any of those teams. I think when the committee looked at it, and with Zion Williamson's in the lineup, Duke was 26-1, and that's a big thing. And then the three or four other losses they had, when he was hurt. But North Carolina, being at number six in the KenPom, really, you know, still a top 7-8 team in the nation. Kobe White, freshman. He didn't start the year off great, but he is the key to how they push the ball. North Carolina loves to run, get the ball going in transition. He needs to be playing well. Nasir Little, Luke May on the inside. Luke May was a most outstanding player of the regional 2 years ago when they won the title as a sophomore, still here as a senior. Again, guys that have been veteran experience are big when it comes into these NCAA tournament games where it's one and done. They know what to expect. But the tempo that they play at, if they can get that going, it's hard for a lot of teams to score 85, 90 points in that type of environment.
Yeah, you mentioned Luke May. I remember when I watched the game when Zion Williamson ripped his shoe open, the shoe tear heard around the world. But I was so impressed with Luke May in that game. Yeah. I think he had upper 20s in points, nearly had a double-double. Fantastic player.
Yeah.
So now we've covered the one seeds. Which games are you looking at for upsets here?
Yeah, you know, are we talking first round?
Yeah, let's begin with first round. Yeah.
All right. You know, I think you've got a team like Belmont play Maryland in the first round. Belmont played last night in the first four. They've got a guy off the radar, Dylan Windler. He's a guy that probably no one at home is going to know, but he's an NBA draft prospect. They've got another big guy on the inside that was phenomenal last night. He was a freshman. And they're a team that they play so well together. Rick Bird is their coach, does a phenomenal job. And they're a team that, because of their discipline and their toughness, can give Maryland problems. Because Maryland, again, likes to use their athleticism. They like to go up and down. And they're a team that could cause problems and I think actually upset Maryland tomorrow night. Second game to look at for upset would be, let's see, as we go down the bracket here, a lot of people are talking about LSU-Yale. You know, I'm not a big fan of that one because at the end of the day, LSU plays in the SEC. Yale plays in the Ivy League. Yale's good. Mieoni, I coached against him when I was at Dartmouth. He is a pro prospect for sure, but LSU's got four of those guys. And, yes, they have got some turmoil with their coach not being there, but they have McDonald's All-Americans. And I think at the end of the day, their talent level will push them through. It could be it'll probably be a close game because James Jones, the coach of Yale, does a great job. But I think at the end, their just athleticism will overwhelm. Going down to the West, you got a game like Murray State and Marquette. Ja Morant, who's going to be a top five pick for Murray State. Super athlete, kind of reminds me of a hybrid Russell Westbrook, John Wall type player where got Wall speed and quickness but scores and can dunk like Westbrook. And he's the guy that can, in a one-game situation, can go for 25, 30 points and against a team like Marquette that has been struggling as of late. Probably would have been a three seed if the tournament had started 2 weeks ago. Fell to a five. Could give them problems. The UCI Anteaters from the Big West, 30-5 this year. Kansas State playing without Dean Wade, one of their all-conference players. But Coach Turner does a great job. They run in a stampede of big guys. They've got solid guard play. I think the biggest thing for UCI in that situation will be how they handle Kansas State's physicality. Because UCI, again, they're in the Big West. Not as many big physical guys from spot to spot. The other one, and it's, you know, 50-50 type game, would be Seton Hall over Wofford. Wofford's been a surprise team throughout the year to a lot of people because Wofford, they're in the Southern Conference, not heard of a lot. They've got a great shooter by the name of McGee. He really can get his shot off. If he makes three more three-point shots, he'll be the all-time three-point shooter in Division I basketball. So he's a guy like that that can carry them. But I think at the end of the day, Seton Hall, which is actually the lower seed, is just, again, playing in the Big East, battle-tested, came off a tough loss against Villanova in the Big East title, but beat Marquette, has beaten Georgetown, beat Kentucky back in December. They may just be a little too much, and that's when you look at those numbers, and they may not be technically correlated to an upset, but that's how the committee did it.
And as we go through these different upset possibilities, one stat that people love to talk about is strength of schedule, and you know, rightfully so. Kansas State has the, going back to the UCI versus Kansas State matchup, Kansas State coming in with the number 26 strength of schedule in the country versus UCI's number 197. As a fan, it seems to me like that is something that I should be paying a lot of attention to. As a coach, would you say that strength of schedule is the, maybe not the end-all be-all, but how important would you rank that?
Yeah, I think it's in the middle. I think the big thing is that Kansas State has played in big games. They played against better competition game in and game out. And that's because they're in the Big 12 when you're going up against Texas Tech, who's the three seed. You're playing Kansas at Kansas and at home. You're playing Texas, who didn't have a great year this year, but year in and year out, it's a great team. Oklahoma in the tournament. I mean, their conference has seven teams in the big dance right now. So that really, you know, favors them in that regard. UCI, again, playing in the Big West, where half the teams, because of their non-conference schedule, are playing some of those high major teams to get money. Their records aren't going to be as good, so it's going to reflect in their strength of schedule. So I think it's more of a thing where it's going to reflect on the experience and opportunity to go out and play versus just, you know, playing, you know, your general team game by game by game.
And another, as we continue on the topic of upsets, one game that I was talking a little bit on my previous show about just the whole bracket, but one game that I'm really stuck on, unable to decide between a winner, would be Cincinnati versus Iowa. Can I ask your excellence for some for some tips there? I don't know which team to pick.
You know, it's a game again of contrasting styles, and Coach Cronin of Cincinnati, they're physical. He is a tough minded coach, and he gets his guys to defend, and it's going to be a half court game that he wants to play. Jaron Cumberland, who plays for them, as a second or third team All-American. Iowa, very different. They let it to get it and go, and more of a flow spread type of game where they're going to a little bit looser, a lot of threes. They got Luke Garza on the inside, who's more of a pick and pop 4-5, and at the end of the day, one thing that in these type of games that happens is it becomes a slower tempo game. And I like Cincinnati to pull this one out just because it's going to be a tempo game, and Coach Cronin will do a great job keeping Iowa's offense at bay.
All right.
And it's in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, that's actually a big factor.
You have to factor that in, that hometown.
I didn't know that.
Effect there.
Okay. Well, then thank you for that. That pick, I got no upsets on the south side of the bracket right now. I have upsets in all the other sides, but the south, I got none.
Yeah, you know, and the other one,
St. Mary's, though. I mean, but the thing is, I just don't think Villanova is going to come out and lose in the first round.
Yeah, you know, Villanova's, they lost a lot from last year's championship team. They have two great seniors that are going to dominate inside. St. Mary's has been very consistent all year. And Villanova's success comes down to their three-point shooting, how well they've been shooting the ball. And if they shoot it well, which they did for most of the year, they won. But when they went in, they had two stretches where they lost three or four games in a row, and that's when they weren't shooting the ball well. Be it in Connecticut, where St. Mary's has to go across the country, St. Mary's is, again, a good team. Jordan Ford, one of the top scorers in the nation. But I think you're right. I think Villanova gets this one by 3 or 4 points.
Yeah, it's just hard to pick against a team as historically successful as Villanova has been, really year after year after year. Mm-hmm. I remember when they won that first championship. That whole team was just incredible. I believe Josh Hart was on that team.
Josh Hart, Ryan Archidiakono, some players.
And Ed, how much fun is Josh Hart to watch on the Lakers? I know the Lakers aren't doing the best right now, but I love watching him. And
yeah, he's been definitely a surprise for a lot of fans who may not have known him, may not have been as big of a name, second round pick. But he's definitely been a surprise. And he's the guy that, you know, as you hear the trade talks, they talk about not trading him because he is such a valuable asset to him.
And so now moving on to the past just the round of 64, what are some teams that name a few teams that you think could be potential Cinderellas this year?
Yeah, I think you've got a few. And first, and this is kind of my sleeper Final Four pick, and I know a lot of Gonzaga fans won't be happy with me, but Florida State.
Okay.
I really like Florida State. I watched them play Duke a few times throughout the year, and other times on TV. And Coach Hamilton, man, he has 10, 11, 12 guys that can all play. They're super athletic. They're long. They defend. They are grown men out there. And I think that their toughness, they can shoot the ball, they can play man or zone, is a huge benefit to them. And last year, both them and Gonzaga were in the West region last year, played in the Sweet 16, Florida State won. And both teams are relatively the same. Obviously, Gonzaga added Brandon Clark and Gino Crandall, who's a wing for them who comes off the bench. But Florida State, I think that they're playing really well right now. And, yes, they lost to Duke in the ACC title, but that was kind of a jigsaw that they were about to face.
Yeah.
Zion Williamson playing so well. But I think Florida State is a potential Final Four team. I think that looking ahead to some potential matchups, if Auburn were to play Kansas, I think Auburn was going to win. I love Coach Pearl. He does a great job in there shooting the ball really, really well right now. You've got a team like we talked about with Cincinnati that could potentially upset Tennessee. Some of these lower seeded teams that pull off upsets to get hot, anything can happen. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I know Buffalo's a trendy pick after they beat Arizona last year and had just a phenomenal year with Coach Oates, 31-3. Tony Massenberg was Conference Player of the Year. Again, he can score at will. So there's a lot of teams that, you know, just are playing at that point where if they get a win and get to that next round, there's a chance that we could be seeing them the following weekend in the Sweet 16.
So we've talked just now about potentially underrated teams. Are there any teams that you think may have gotten a seed higher than they deserve?
Ooh, good question. Good question. I think a lot of teams, in my opinion, got underseeded. Like if you take a team like Cincinnati, they're not a 7 seed. They won the AAC tournament. They won. They finished second place in the AAC. They're not the 28th. Best team, 28th, 29th best team, yeah, as their seeding would indicate in the nation. A team like, again, you could throw a Michigan in there, maybe potentially being a little underseeded. Seton Hall, in that same boat. So I think that for the most part, the committee did a pretty good job with the seedings and getting the proper matchups. I would say, if anything, some teams were underseeded at best.
Yeah, I've been looking a lot through these KenPom rankings. I love KenPom.com for this. You guys who don't know, KenPom.com is the best, in the humble opinion of Penguin Radio, the best college basketball ranking list that's out there. And if we're just going by their rankings, looks like Washington might have been overseeded a little bit. The Pac-12, not the best conference this season. I'm a pretty big Cal Bears fan.
Got it.
And
still suffering from that 3-15 record in conference.
Suffering is right. I think they ended 3-15 in conference.
Hey, but they didn't lose a conference game in March. They won all
three.
That's
true. That's true.
They were 0-15 going into March, so they finished 3-15.
Yeah, I can't not smile at that a little bit. And one of those wins was against Washington. So
that's true.
And I believe Washington was number 25 during that game.
They were.
I love Matt Bradley on Cal, but other than that, there's not a ton of eye-popping talent on that team, shall we say. I had a chance to go and see them play Seattle U at the beginning of the year this year, and Cal was never in that game. Seattle just came into the building, and it was a focused team versus an unfocused team from the tip-off.
And to Coach Jones over at Cal's defense, they do have a young team.
They'll return
a lot of guys, and they'll do a great job recruiting and get guys in there that can help elevate the program. And when you take over a program like he did that was kind of in shambles, it takes some time, and he'll get it back. Yeah, it's Cal. I mean, he's got a name. If you've got something to recruit to, Haas Pavilion will be rocking. Don't worry, son.
Yeah, I the last time I was thinking back on my experiences over at Haas Pavilion, last time I was really excited, incredibly excited about the team was back in the Alan Crabb, Alan Crabb days. That they played UNLV at the end of one of their actually it was the last game of non-conference play that year, and UNLV had Anthony Bennett that year. And Anthony Bennett beat the Bears on a buzzer-beating dunk.
Wow.
And I was sitting right behind the hoop. It was pretty incredible.
I don't want to date myself, but in 2006, I was coaching at Long Beach State, and we played Cal, and they had some guy by the name of Leon Poe.
Oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, Devon Harden, do you remember him?
Not as much.
He had a little drink in the NBA, 6'11", just an absolute animal. Allende Ubaca, he was our point guard.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Oakland Tech. Let's just say we didn't fare so well.
I can imagine. Yeah, I'm especially familiar with Poe because my family's from Massachusetts, so we're all Celtics fans. Leon Poe's everyone loves Leon Poe.
Yes, exactly.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more NCAA tournament analysis for you guys in just a few minutes. Stay tuned right here on Penguin Radio. I'm Soren O'Connell with Scott Waterman here, the associate head coach of the men's basketball team. And if you want all of the correct picks for the NCAA tournament, keep listening. Be right back. Just won't let me be. I'm rocking. Won't you rock with me?
Competitor with the environment to develop her leadership skills, discipline, sacrifice, faith, patriotism, and commitment. DU Did You Know brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio here at radio.dominican.edu.
Hello, 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 penguins everywhere. Hope you guys just enjoyed that PSA from DU Did You Know. We're back here in the studio. I'm here with Scott Waterman, the associate head coach of the men's basketball team here at Dominican. Scott, welcome to the second half of the show. Right now, we're going to just dive straight into the round of 16. Don't want to get bogged down with too many games because we only have so much time. But what are you looking for in the Sweet 16? Who are some teams you have in? Who are some teams you have out?
Well, we'll start in the East, and I have a Duke-Virginia Tech ACC matchup, and Duke moving on there. Even though Virginia Tech beat him earlier in the year, that was without, again, Zion. And that guy just changes the entire dynamic for the Duke team. And then we have LSU, Michigan State, so kind of going chalk. And I have Michigan State coming up with that one. But ultimately, at the end of the day, Duke advancing to the Final Four in Minneapolis.
Well, that's a fairly safe pick. As I was saying earlier, it's pretty hard to dissuade people that Duke won't win the entire tournament at this point.
Yeah, and Michigan State will give him a battle. Tom Izzo, heck, that guy has 600 wins. He knows what he's doing.
He sure
does. They've been bumped and bruised and banged up all year, and just don't know if their depth will allow them to continue to do that. And Duke's athleticism is good. And Coach K, what can we say about him with five titles and leading men's victories? So I like Duke just to come through in that one.
So you got Duke against who in the
Michigan State
against Michigan State
or excuse
or
me
Mississippi State
Vatech.
Oh, okay. Got to write all this down for our records here at Penguin Radio.
So when I'm 2 for 16 on these teams, you can remind me.
Okay, I will do. And then so moving down from Duke and Virginia Tech, who do you have next?
LSU and Michigan State were those next two teams.
Okay. We talked a little bit about LSU earlier. Really a ridiculously talented team, as you're saying. Yeah. Do you have them going? How much farther do you have the Tigers going?
No, just they'll lose to Michigan State.
Oh, losing to Michigan State? Okay. Yeah. I was going to say that's a That's a bold move. Nah. Yeah, but you can't doubt Tom Izzo. I mean, he not only is he such a great coach. Oh, I was actually about to say that he was the coach of the U.S. International team, but that's actually Coach K. And then going down the bracket, I assume you have Gonzaga to start the West Side Sweet 16.
Yeah, so I have Gonzaga playing Florida State in that first Sweet 16 mm-hmm. game, and Florida State pulling the upset. I like Florida State moving on. Again, like I said earlier, they're playing Gonzaga. They beat them last year. I like them again this year. On the bottom half, I like Texas Tech playing Michigan. In Texas Tech, Chris Beard has done a phenomenal job to lose four starters, but they have a kid by the name of Jarrett Culver, who's an All-American. He's done a phenomenal job playing this year, can score at will. I think that he's a guy that can carry them against a Michigan team coached by John Beilein, who's very disciplined. But Texas Tech is going to outscore them, 62-59, something like that. It'll be a lower-scoring game, but Texas Tech wins. They got Florida State, Texas Tech in that Elite Eight, and I like Texas Tech going to the Final Four.
And we've been talking a lot about offensive versus defensive-minded teams. In particular, I was thinking about the I was just looking at this a second ago. Can't remember which game it was, but it was basically a matchup of two extremely defensive-minded teams. Would you say that defense-first teams go farther in the NCAA tournament or offense-first?
Defensive teams typically do, just because the pace slows down a little bit, but that's not always the case. If you have offensive guys that can get hot and start making shots, that, you know, changes things.
And, all right, moving on to the south side of the bracket, we got, I'm assuming, Virginia. That's who I have.
Virginia, Wisconsin.
And yeah. A guy I really love on Wisconsin would be Ethan Happ. He's playing. How many guys do you see actually play through to their senior year nowadays with talent levels like that? I know he wasn't necessarily the most highly touted prospect coming into Wisconsin, but the things he's done this year are phenomenal.
Yes. Again, another All-American caliber player. Big thing with him is being a big guy. He shoots an awful free throw percentage, and he gets fouled a ton, but he's a presence on the inside. Coach guard, they run a swing offense, which is a slower tempoed offense. They'll grind you down. That game may break into the 40s in scoring if Virginia plays Wisconsin, just because they're both so slow down oriented. But I like Virginia to advance.
All right, so we got Virginia over Wisconsin on that side of the Sweet 16. Then going down the bracket, who do you have coming out just below Virginia and Wisconsin?
Purdue, who had a phenomenal year. Carson Edwards. Averaged 23.4 points per game, can really score the ball. They've got a big guy on the inside by the name of Matt Harns, who is a presence side. He's 7'2", he's long, can finish around the rim. Both those guys and Coach Painter is a very defensive-minded oriented coach. I think that's how they'll get there. They'll be playing Tennessee, who, again, up-tempo style, was ranked number one for part of the year. Tennessee advances. Tennessee, Virginia, in a huge contrast of styles, and I like Tennessee to pull it off.
You're saying the up-tempo pace of Tennessee's offense will throw Virginia off?
Yeah, and Tennessee's got two guys, Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams, are two guys that can really score, and they're physical, and they'll match up well with Virginia's physicality. So I like Tennessee, a little bit more battle-tested this year as well, playing the Kentuckys, the LSUs of the world, and I think Tennessee gets to the Final Four.
All right, and now moving down a little farther down the bracket, over to the lower right-hand corner, the Midwest side. We got likely North Carolina. I don't see a team that can beat North Carolina on their way to the Sweet 16.
No, I would agree with you. I think Utah State will beat Washington, but UNC's just going to be a little too much for them. They'll be playing Auburn, in my opinion. Kansas has had an up-and-down type of year, not your typical Kansas team. This is the first time, Soren, in the last 6 years that they have not been a one or two seed. So this shows you the consistency that Coach Self brings to that program on a year-in and year-out basis. They've had some suspensions. They've had injuries. with Azubuike, their big guy on the inside. So it's just been a down year for them, and a down year for them. Still 25-9 and a 4 seed.
Yeah.
And first time in 14 years they didn't win the Big 12. But I think Auburn's just playing really well, coming off that SEC title, how they're shooting the ball. I like them to advance to the Sweet 16, but UNC just a little too much for Auburn on that top half of that that region. On the bottom half, this is another sleeper, Iowa State. I like Iowa State to beat Houston in a 6-3 second-round game to get to the Sweet 16. Iowa State, Coach Fromm, again, they had a great start to the year, had some chemistry issues. He openly has talked about, and now they figured things out to win the Big 12 conference. I like them to beat a tough Kelvin Sampson-coached Houston team, and they will play Kentucky in the Sweet 16. But again, Kentucky's extremely talented, and I think Kentucky-North Carolina face-off for a second time. Kentucky beat them earlier in the year, but I think North Carolina gets revenge and marches on to Minneapolis.
I like it. And when we were talking a little bit about how Kansas is having a little bit of an off year, one thing that I was thinking about as you were saying that was the year that UConn won the NCAA tournament, despite being, I believe they were an 8 seed that year, against Kentucky in the final. What would you say to people like me who are maybe a little bit worried that Kansas might make a deeper run because of their tried and tested experience in this tournament?
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you, but when you look at their roster, it's not a traditional Kansas roster. They've got, you know, two or three freshmen that are playing significant minutes. They have a transfer, Diedrich Lawson, who again, is a great player, really good. But at the end of the day, he's not enough to carry them through.
And so now we have, you had Duke and Virginia Tech, and did you have Duke going to the Final Four as well?
Yes.
Okay, so we got Duke in the Final Four. We got UNC in the Final Four. We got Tennessee in the Final Four. And your last team was?
Texas Tech.
Texas
Sleeper
Tech.
Sleeper team.
I like it. We're known for bold statements here at Penguin Radio. And now we're welcoming in the godfather of Penguin Radio, Stu Horn.
Here I am. I'm on mic 3. I can't hear anything. Bring me up over here, please. Headphone 3, I guess. Yeah, it's what it looks like. No, it's plugged into...
Am I doing this right?
Yeah, it is 3.
Okay.
Okay, good.
We're
good. I was just driving in listening to you guys at 102.3.
Oh, wow.
In fact, yeah, the traffic around campus was just horrible. So I was listening to you guys, and actually, when I first got in the car, I was listening to you talking about Cal and lamenting the 3-15 thing. and then you said, yeah, but the 3 were league games, and you didn't lose anything in March and all that stuff. That was very entertaining stuff. Very busy right this moment, but I wanted to. You got Scotty in here, and I wanted to say, you know, this was a rough season for the Penguin men.
Yeah.
And I know that not a lot of people come to you and say nice things after a season like that. But I want to be one of the few that do, because I know how much you love the team and how hard you push for all of us, because we live vicariously through you. As the team goes, so do we.
Yes, thank you, Stuart.
And, you know, man, you're a heck of an addition. You got great energy. I know your players love and respect you, and certainly the radio guys do. And for all you do for us, I just want to say thank you, Coach.
Stu, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I mean, yeah. It's an honor to have the opportunity to come on and work with you guys, and I appreciate you guys even giving me the opportunity to come and bump my gums about basketball, but I love it, and anything I can do to help you and your guys' program, I'm here for you guys.
Well, and that's the truth, because you always do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've proven it many times. So, Soren, thanks for letting me butt into your show. I just wanted to say hi to Scott and to thank him for a great season.
No, that's great. You took the words right out of my mouth, Stu.
Well, while you're here, can we get your picks?
Do you have
any Final Four and national title picks?
Are you up to date on your bracketology, Stu?
Duke. Gotta go.
Stuart Horn, ladies and gentlemen, with the Duke pick. Pulling out the sleeper Duke pick here. No one had any idea he was going to say that. Also, the reason Stu is in such a rush is because of Soul Candy. If you guys happen to be in the area tonight, Soul Candy's going on in Angelico Hall at 7 p.m. It's a showcase of different musical talents we have here on campus, as well as many other things. We got poetry, and who even knows what else you're going to have to come and see to find out. Again, that's in about an hour and 15 minutes if you happen to be in the area listening to 102.3 Penguin Radio. But We got to get back to this NCAA tournament. We're down to the final four here now. I'm here with Scott Waterman. You're listening to Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. And in the final four right now, we've got Duke playing Texas Tech and UNC taking on Tennessee. Let's start with Duke versus Texas Tech. I mean, this is just a mashup of heavyweights if I've ever seen it, but yeah, do you doubt Zion here at all?
No, then they played earlier this year at MSG, Madison Square Garden, back in December, and Duke pulled it out, but it was a tight game, nip and tuck. Texas Tech led, and then Duke came back and made a strong run at the end, and I think Duke is just playing so well right now they will advance. But again, a heck of a year for Coach Beard and his Red Raiders. They should be without question, he should be getting Coach of the Year nominations.
Well, so now we got Duke in the final, and then on the other side, we got Tennessee and UNC, a potential UNC-Duke championship game. I'm sweating just thinking about it. Do you have that matchup taking place, or do you have Tennessee taking on Duke?
We have two teams that play similar styles, and when you have two teams that play similar styles, the team with a little bit better talent typically comes out on top, and UNC is definitely the more talented team from top to bottom. It's going to be, again, another close game, but at the end of the day, I like UNC pushing on through, and yes, Soren, for the fourth time.
Oh, my.
And how about this? They have played Duke and North Carolina. I read this earlier today on Twitter. Thank you for all my information, Twitter. They have played 316 times in their history, and this will be the first time they've ever played in the NCAA tournament. It'll happen in Minneapolis, April 8th, national title
game.
And I think Duke will pull it off.
And well, when you fill out your bracket on the ESPN website, they usually make you pick a final score.
Yeah.
What do you think the final score is going to look like here?
I think it'll be 74-70 Duke.
74-70 for the Blue Devils. Folks, pencil it in, pen it in. We got Duke winning the national championship over the Tar Heels 74-70. It's the secret inside pick here at Penguin Radio.
And here's the worst thing, Soren. I think because you see me here, I walk in without notes. I do this off the top of my head because I've seen all these guys play and I study all these teams. It's just I know nothing. I overanalyze because I know too much. So
yeah.
Take this with all of a grain of salt, because probably at the end of the day, if someone who picks by their mascots will probably end up with a better bracket than I do. But I think the thing that's what makes this tournament so great is there is such parity. And I think the thing is that you got like mid-major teams that are winning conferences. It shows how good they are when they can go and compete with a team from a Power 5 conference like the Pac-12, ACC, and beat them. And it just shows the parity that's developed in college basketball over the last 10, 15 years, where 15 years ago when you saw a game of, let's say, Kansas State versus UCI, you were saying, no, Kansas State easily advances. But now it's like, if you watch all the pundits on ESPN and CBS Sports like I do, they're talking, oh, UCI's got a great chance to win this game, and Coach Turner is a great coach, and UCI or Kansas State's going to struggle without Dean Wade. And it just, everything changes. It has changed the last 15, 20 years because of the parity of the game.
Yeah, I think a lot of, as basketball's just gained more popularity over the last 15 years, it's just such an incredible sport to watch in general, because, I mean, the NBA has two rounds of a draft. Only 60 players are picked into that draft.
And you think about that, 10 of them are foreign guys. So it's really only 50 guys. And then if you take with that the fact that of those 50, 10 of them, 15 of them are freshmen. So now you're only talking 30 guys out of a potential 3,000 that play college basketball.
It's absolutely incredible. And of course, those foreign guys, it's not like they're just showing up and they're not that great. We have players like Doncic entering the league, and Ricky Rubio. I remember when Rubio showed up on the scene. Obviously, he wasn't quite as good as he was billed initially, but still an incredible player nonetheless.
No, he is.
And so now that we've talked about teams now, let's take a little bit farther of a look ahead to the NBA draft. Who do you think is who are some like undervalued players going into that draft? Because we know Zion is going to go number one.
Yeah.
I think, assume.
You got a guy like Ja Morant, who we talked about earlier from Murray State. He's getting top five. top five talk. You got a guy, Darius Garland from Vanderbilt, who tore his ACL, but was McDonald's All-American, one of the best high school players in the country as a freshman, gets hurt. He's already said he's going to the draft. So you got a guy like him entering the draft. You got a guy like Dylan Windler from Belmont, under the radar. So there's a lot of guys that can come in here and be under the radar type guys for the draft. Just kind of perusing some other teams here that may have Wofford, Ryan McGee. Kentucky's got their normal stable of guys that they're going to run in. A team like Utah State, I don't know if he'll declare for the draft, but they have a freshman big guy who's got a 7'6 wingspan. He's 6'11. Whoa. He's a very good player. So there's a ton of guys that can come in here and just sneak up on you.
Actually, I had a question about a specific player.
Let's go. Well,
two specific players, similar players, Taco Fall and Bol Bol. What do you think those guys are going to have success in the NBA?
You know, I think they're, I don't know, for people that may or may not know, Taco Fall for Central Florida, he's 7'6", and I think the biggest thing for him is going to be his mobility. He doesn't move great. He obviously, 7'6", he can block shots, he can finish inside, but his ability to move up and down the court will be a tough, and he's had some foul issues. If you look at the history traditionally of the NBA, those type of guys have never done well, that are heavier legged, don't move as great. So I think he will get a shot. I just don't see him as a long-term prospect in the NBA. Bol Bol, obviously the son of Manute Bol, who was 7'7", played with the 76ers, had quite a career. I think, he's going to be a guy again. He got hurt. I think one of the things that a lot of people question was his heart, how much he really wanted it. Because if you look at him physically, he's probably 170 pounds, 180 pounds. He can shoot it. He's very skilled. I think he'll have a better chance, but he has to change his mentality.
Yeah, and another concern with, obviously it's a concern with all players of that size, but it's just injuries. Bol Bol went out at the beginning of the season, not with any really horrific injury. It was just a stress fracture in his right ankle. And that's a classic big man injury. So we'll be looking to see if he can recoup from that. We were mentioning Cal earlier. I was really hoping that he would stay healthy because my dad and I wanted to go see Bol Bol play against the Bears. But it wasn't to be, unfortunately. So shout out Bol Bol, shout out Taco Fall. And, well, we're just about coming to the end of the radio show here. And I wanted to ask you one last question,
sure,
Scott.
Sure, anything for you. The only thing would be better than you, Soren, is if Forrest hadn't gotten that laryngitis. We could add two of you guys.
It's true.
But you know what? I got the better looking one.
Well, thank you. I have to ask, though, since we have the associate head coach of the Dominican men's team in the room, what are some things that we can look forward to next season? I saw you and Booker walking around with what looked like a recruit over on the Day of Giving the other day.
Yeah, so per NCAA rules, we can't talk about recruits until they've officially committed. So we won't go there. But, we return a great young core of guys. And you have Jordan Williams, Chris Williams, Romeo Mays, Sam Averbuch, all guys that have a lot of experience. And we went through a process last year. And unfortunately, our record doesn't show the improvements in the strides that we made. We play in a heck of a conference. We were in a lot of close games, and we couldn't quite figure out how to get over the top until we beat Holy Names at the very end. That was a big step for us. I'm really excited to get back in. We've already gotten back in the gym. We started up Monday with our workouts. We had a two-week moratorium where we're not allowed to work with our guys after the season, but we jumped right back in, and it's a very different culture now. These young guys, they're hungry. They've grown up. I think a lot of coaches like to say best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores, and the best thing about sophomores is they become upperclassmen. And so we're really excited. They've grown up a lot. And if you look at the league from top to bottom, a lot of upperclassmen are graduating. So this is a team where the culture is finally in place. They have learned to win. We're going to have to bring in, some help for them as well. And that's, with our recruiting, what we're striving to do. Replacing C.J. Thomas isn't going to be an easy task. When you get a guy that's going to average 17 and six or seven rebounds for you on a night-in-night-out basis and know what you're getting, But I think we're going to look to play a more up-tempo style. I know we play fast already, but that's got to be something that we really need to emphasize, is use our speed and quickness and shooting ability to get out in the break, get some easier looks. Obviously, Futch is starting to, at the end of the year, played really well, and a lot of the coaches commented on how great he played, and he's going to continue to be a force. We got to make sure he stays in shape. But again, if he can continue to dominate on the inside, we get him running to the basket, setting ball screens and rolling. I think it's going to be a fun team to watch next year. Obviously, we're one day into next year already, but the guys are focused and locked in, and they know now what it's really going to take, and they're bought into this process. So we just got to continue to build, and if there's a day where they're not getting better, then that's not a good day. We have to improve 1% every day, and after 100 days, we've improved 100%, then we're doing something right. So we can go with our practices now until April 30th, then finals, and then they're gone for the summer. So these next 6 weeks are going to be critical for the development of next year's team.
Totally agree with everything you just said. And you mentioned Christian Futch. I have to shout him out because he's a member of the comm department over here. He's been in Penguin Radio many times. And actually, when I was doing my research for the PacWest tournament, just a few weeks ago here at the Conlin Center, I noticed Christian Futch was actually number 3 in the PacWest in blocks per game.
Yeah, and he's actually the all-time leading shot blocker in Dominican basketball Division II history.
Really?
I'm
going to have to use that in the opening day next season.
There you go.
Writing it down.
If you want some more fun facts, let me know, because I've gone through and talked to some of our guys about the potential. We talk about legacies and what type of legacy are these guys going to leave behind, and that's something that we've talked about. So if you want some more fun stats, let me know, and I can provide those for you next year.
All right, well, we're just about running out of time here, 5:58, and the Soul Candy folks need to take over, so I'm gonna have to sign off now. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, 102.3 on your FM dial here in San Rafael, California. I'm joined by Scott Waterman, and we must sign off now. I hope you guys loved our NCAA tournament picks and a quick 2-minute preview of the men's basketball season here at Dominican. Make sure to tune in next week at the same time for more Hot in the Igloo. And on the previous hour, we'll have Behind the Grind, where we're going to be talking some women's basketball as well with the women's players next week. So tune into that as well. But again, if you can and you're in the area, come to Soul Candy. It'll be starting in about an hour. And I'm Soren O'Connell. That's Scott Waterman. We love you guys.
Soren, thank you again very much.
And
tell Stu, thank you. It's been an honor. And if you guys need any more analysis, let me know.
I'm sure we will. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. See you, everybody.